Hi, everyone. We'll be going to lunch right after this, so bear with me. Thank you for having me here today. I'm going to talk to you, for a short period of time about how I've incorporated the protocols in the archival curriculum, primarily at the University of Arizona, where I was an assistant professor previously. Now I'm at Simmons College in Boston, Massachusetts. I'll be talking specifically about two courses, Documenting Diverse Cultures and Communities, and Introductory Basic 101 classes. So what informs my pedagogy definitely are the protocols, and I've tried to incorporate reciprocal education and training in the ways that I've been able to. Thinking about cultural competency, that was mentioned earlier, and how some institutions still don't think about those concepts and ideas, which I think is changing, but it's definitely, we still see that same problem. With Knowledge River, people here familiar with Knowledge River? A few of you. It's a program at the University of Arizona that's been around for quite some time, dedicated to supporting students who are interested in Native American and Latino information environments and serving those communities in particular. So through that program, I've been working with students to really develop their voices and their leadership skills. In fact, there will be a session on Friday that I hope some of you will attend, and I'll advertise it further later. And also learning from tribal archivists and librarians in whatever capacity that I can. For instance, I've been in touch with Omar Poehler, with the program there, the Culture Keepers program, and I think it's really important to build a network as well. The pluralizing model through the Archived Education Research Institute, and this is a group that's come out of about ARI, and Ricky is a part of this group as well, which really is pushing for archival educators to think about historicizing and contextualizing archival theory and practice. And the way that I've done this is by incorporating the protocols into that area. Also, Jennifer mentioned postmodernism and where that fits. But the other idea is to prioritize pluralism, inclusivity, multidisciplinarity, interdisciplinarity, transdisciplinarity, whatever term you'd like to use, and to think about pluralizing the student body and curriculum. Also, Ann Gilliland has been very vocal, along with Kelvin White, two other educators, in really promoting this model. So like I said, I'll be talking about my experience mainly at the U of A, through Knowledge River at the School of Information now, previously School of Information Resources and Library Science. Fall 2014, I taught a course documenting diverse cultures and communities focused specifically on Native American and Latino populations and thinking about documentation efforts in those communities. Since 2013, when I started teaching, how I've incorporated the protocols in Intro to Archives classes. So the Documenting Diverse Cultures and Communities course, like I said, it's been mainly to explore. I designed it differently to explore archival and library documentation efforts in American Indian and Latino communities. We use the decolonizing framework. We read Linda Tuhiwai Smith's book to inform archival practice and to think about archival and library practice in the classroom setting. It's very dialogical. Students were very open discussing perspectives and even the possibility of decolonization and some of the difficulties with engaging with decolonizing. Course objectives, one of them was to understand some of the historical and sociocultural issues concerning documentation efforts. And this is where the protocols fit into our discussions. In terms of student engagement, I had students develop digital stories as a way for them to reflect upon their roles as stewards of information, particularly in the context of diversity and in serving very different and diverse communities. And out of that class, we got a number of really great reflections, students who had a lot of tension and were really sort of troubled and confused about, well, how do I go about this process? I feel very disempowered. And this was an opportunity for them to feel empowered And one student in particular has been shopping around a manuscript as well on thinking about decolonizing archival methodology. Now he's at NAU, actually, so maybe I'll put him in touch with you, Jonathan. And the presentation on Friday, we're going to have some Knowledge River students talk to the audience about using storytelling through different modes, technological modes, and discussing some of the digital stories that they produced. If we have time, I'll show you one of the digital stories produced by a non-Indigenous student, but who was really struggling with some of the issues of decolonization and thinking about the archive and the notion of evidence. In the Introduction to Archival Methods and Services course, it's Archives 101, where students are being introduced to basic concepts and ideas, and the protocols fit in this class in terms of their incorporation into archival theory and practice. So we don't just talk about European-American theory or European theory, in particular the Dutch Manual and all of those other sort of tenets of archival theory. We also think about it in terms of postmodernism and how the protocols fit within this process. And I've tried to also devote 1 week to, well, I have devoted 1 week since I've started teaching to discussing the ethical implications of the protocols and the sort of the political nature of doing this kind of work. They also read related literature that is both pro and against the protocols, although there hasn't been very much literature against, though there is something that was written, I think, in Easy Writer, right? I think Easy Access, yeah, Writer. And more recently, I've been working on exercises with archivists at the Arizona Historical Society and having them come in virtually into the classroom to talk about reference services and what they actually do when they get certain requests from patrons. And in this particular activity, what I'm going to do is have students do an actual reference interview, a virtual reference interview, but then adapt it and perform it in the classroom. So it's a way to think through some of the issues as a group. So after teaching for a few years now and incorporating the protocols, these are some of the observations that I've gathered from students in particular. And students are interested in discussing issues with archivists who have implemented the protocols. This is something that always comes up. They want more practitioners to be involved in the discussions. This is very important. And building relationships of mutual respect is also important. One student mentioned that she wanted to be a part of this process, and how could she be a part of this process? And something she thought about was perhaps students could actually work on a directory for Native American consultation purposes. So something very practical that can get done in the classroom, maybe not one semester, but through, you know, various semesters of building on some project. But also engaging with Native American communities. It's one thing to discuss these issues, but also how do we incorporate Native American communities into the classroom and really balance that out and be through service learning projects and that sort of thing. So these are a few of the observations that I've had. And others have also, I've had other ideas as I've heard other speakers. And something that might be a possibility, particularly given the Sustainable Cultural Heritage Program that's developing really interesting modules, is putting together an open access course, right, where we're using some of this content and developing or incorporating the protocols as a sort of framework to think through these issues. And so we can bring different speakers and develop modules that will assist all sorts of people interested in the protocols and thinking more critically about them. So that is all for me. Would you be interested in watching one of the digital stories?
My purpose in choosing this story has many facets. At the age of almost 48, I am embarking on a third career. When I was considerably younger, I went to law school. I was quite confident and purposeful for a first-year law student.
Can everybody hear it?
I remember marching up the stairs to the faculty offices
and introducing myself to the professors who taught Indian law. I said that I wanted to work on the reservation, and was there any way they could help me find a summer job? They found me a position at the tribal attorney's office for the White Mountain Apache tribe. I was thrilled. I was finally going to get to help people. While working for the tribe, I learned a lot and I met some really great people, but I felt like I should not be there speaking for people when I was not part of their community. At the end of my summer job, I walked away and did not do any more legal work for Indigenous peoples. One purpose behind this story is to go back and address what happened and how I felt when I walked away. I've never really looked back, and now is the time. In addition to looking back, I probably need to look forward. Stepping out of the picture completely is not the right thing to do. As I've seen throughout this course, I need to find little things that I can do as an information professional to work with communities on their own terms. Another purpose to the story is to redocument a silence in my life. When I was researching the story, I found that all my photographs were gone. Memories had been pushed to the back of my mind. This story allowed me to go back and recreate those memories from a long silence. You could say that I was idealistic when I went to law school. I had a strong sense of justice, and I moved from the East Coast to Arizona so I could work with Indigenous peoples, even though I had no idea what that really meant. The familiar cityscape of Tucson faded behind me as I drove out of town toward the reservation, where I would be working for the summer. I passed mountain ranges, riverbeds, small canyons and tree groves, unfamiliar territory, rugged beauty that I had never seen before. The open range went on for miles in all directions, with no fences. The sign rose from the grassy expanses, small and obscure at first, but becoming clearer, entering Fort Apache Reservation. White River gently emerged from the surrounding land, now dotted with trees and framed with distant mountains. I drove slowly into town, conscious of my conspicuousness. I felt a bit like a trespasser. The tribal offices where I would be working were near the only stoplight in town. Even though the building was small and simple, it seemed to be the center of activity. I mustered up the courage to go into the building, meet people, and start my work. I would be working in the library in the tribal attorney's office. The shelves of books, statutes, case reporters, codes, and the long wooden table were comfortably familiar to me after going through a year of law school. I was not expecting the cow. Of all the cases to come across my desk in the library, this case really bothered me. The chairman's brother had a cow that had wandered off the reservation. Now, a rancher from off the reservation was claiming the cow was his because it had walked onto his land while grazing. Somehow, we had to establish that the tribe owned the cow and get that cow back. I read case after case about property and evidence of ownership. None of the law that I read seemed to really fit what was going on. What if there was no formal evidence of ownership of the cow? What if the tribe didn't follow the kinds of ownership principles or have the same kinds of thoughts about property as those of the state or federal court system? A few weeks later, we had to leave the reservation to go to state court because a state, not a tribal judge, would be deciding who owned the cow. We drove from White River for a couple of hours to the courthouse in Holbrook. We followed the chairman's brother as he drove in his big dually truck to go claim his cow. We passed the sign, leaving Fort Apache Reservation. As I looked out of the car window, I could see the sedate shapes of cows grazing. They did not care that they might be stepping over the boundary of the reservation. But I was not a cow. I was nervous about leaving the reservation. My stomach churned as I thought of walking into court, the tribal attorney armed with my notes and legal arguments that the cow belonged to the tribe. It all hinged on those law books that really didn't have the answers about a cow who wandered across open land, seeing no borders, looking for the best grass. I don't remember what the judge ruled. I know that there were no victory dances or high fives. We drove quietly back to the reservation. The chairman's brother went back to his ranch, and I went back to the tribal attorney's office. What I do remember is that all those law books, my education, the formal legal proceedings, didn't seem to belong for that community. I loved living and working on the reservation. However, my idealism took a big hit. Why should white man's law even exist on the reservation, and why should I, as a white woman, be there doing this work? I felt like I was displacing someone and speaking for people that I had no business speaking for. I ended up working for the tribe for 2 summers. After law school, everyone was surprised that I didn't go back to work in the tribal legal department. I never even applied. I just walked away. Someday, I might know how to wander across boundaries, to cross borders, to connect with a community of people on their own terms, without my legal books.
She drew all the images and she created the soundtrack on her own.